meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com. It's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
All right, good evening, everyone. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. If you've been following the news in the last couple of days, in particular the ABC episode of 2020 last night, you'll see that the investigation into the disappearance of 18-year-old Natalie Holloway, well over 2.5 years ago now, has taken a very bizarre twist. Is it bizarre, or is it finally the nail that will close the coffin of a young lady that should have been taken home a long time ago? Tonight, I have Deputy District Attorney Robin Sachs from Los Angeles County, a former Deputy District Attorney from Los Angeles County. He's now a lecturer, writer, and defense attorney, Christopher Darden. You'll remember him from the O.J. Simpson trial. On to discuss this hidden camera confession. Is it going to work? Is it finally going to be something that will lock up Joran van der Sloot? Hi, guys. Welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Chris, I'm going to start with you because you're no stranger to high-profile cases, obviously. I'm going to take you back a few years, or I'm going to put you back into the role as a district attorney right now. This may cause you night terrors tonight. I don't know. But all of a sudden, I hand you this case. I say, here we go. We've got nothing but this confession. It has nothing to do with the state. This is a TV show. They went undercover, and they've got this guy talking. What are you going to do?
Well, you know, it's a difficult call, because I think the natural inclination of any prosecutor in a situation like this, where we have this young woman who is apparently dead and who might well have been murdered, I mean, the natural inclination is going to be to prosecute, to find a way to prosecute the case. But being no stranger to high-profile cases, I'm not sure that this is one, at this point, at least that I would want to prosecute, because when we listen to what van der Sloot said and when we dissect it, it's not clear necessarily that he committed a homicide.
When you see a case like this, Chris, it's been in the media nonstop, I don't think as heavy as OJ was, but probably pretty darn close. And then all of a sudden, you as a prosecutor, and I'm going to talk to you in the role of a defense attorney in a little bit, and we'll get to Robin in a minute, have to take this to a jury. How difficult is this? What are you going to do?
Well, in a sense, it's a confession. But when we talk about confessions in the law, confession is an admission to all of the elements of the crime. Now, is it perhaps circumstantial evidence of his guilt? Is it enough to establish his guilt or convince 12 jurors that he committed a murder? I mean, that's the question. And I'm not sure how you get to that point.
And we have to talk about a Reuben law, too, which is, goofy, for lack of a better term. But, Robin, I'm going to read you from the little bit from the transcript of the hidden camera interview, if we can call it that. And it goes like this. It says, what happened to her? And then van der Sloot replies, something happened there. I was lucky. The ocean is huge. I'm blanked if they find her. But the body is gone now. They'll never find her now. Is that not a confession without saying the words?
Well, it might be a confession or be viewed as a confession if we were to take just that portion of the transcript. I mean, I think that if you're going to have a conversation or introduce a conversation, I think you have to introduce all of it, to put it into context, so that a juror or a jury would have a fair opportunity to discern what is truly intended by the speaker. But yes, if you take that portion alone, It sounds awfully sinister, and it might convince some people that he committed a murder.
Okay, Deputy District Attorney Robin Sachs, here you go. You've been switched from the cases that you're working on now, and somebody hands you this file and says, okay, you're going to run with this now. I'm not sure how long this whole tape was. I watched the show. I think it was a 90-minute show, but obviously the tape wasn't 90 minutes. There's some things that you have to prove. Was the tape doctored? Is it edited? Is it all this sort of stuff? There's a big difference, and I want you to talk a little bit about that with the audience, Robin, about what's called a jailhouse confession, where the state actually goes in and brings in somebody undercover into jail to try and elicit a confession from a suspect, to what happened here. Now, again, a Reuben law and American law may be a little bit different, but how would you approach this, Robin?
Well, there's a couple of things. I first of all agree with what Chris has to say in terms of this is a case that's not, you know, something that shows up on your desk and you're saying, wow, I have a slam dunk case. I think from the public's point of view, it feels like a great relief and a great justification of everything that we've been saying before, including boycott Aruba. However, I think the issue is when you're dealing with confessions and admissions and deciding whether or not A, you have a confession or an admission, and B, if you do we have enough other evidence to support the prosecuting of a case? And under the United States law, or in California law, we have what's known as the corpus copat rule, where you need to have more than just a confession, and you have to have evidence other than just the words to show that there was a crime that has in fact been committed. And I think the way the confession stands at the moment, if there's a question as to whether or not, as to what crime we actually have. I mean, do we have a rape? Do we have a murder? I think that at least from the viewing of the video that I saw, and I think there's a big question as to whether or not she was, the Natalie Holloway's body was dumped while she was still alive.
Right.
So I think we have an issue as to whether or not we have a homicide or not is a big problem. Now, in terms of jailhouse confessions versus confessions in this format, I think that there's going to be, the question always is the reliability and the integrity and credibility of the confession. And, you know, in some ways, I think that, you know, someone who discloses to a friend and what they believe to be a secure environment is different than a jailhouse confession where someone else is going to get some sort of benefit in terms of their own sentence for eliciting a confession. But here in this case, the interviewer received $35,000, and while that may not seem like a huge sum of money, I mean, the guy is a businessman, and
right.
he did this, and it was no secret that there was business, and they were smoking pot, and, you know, there's all these questions then in terms of the reliability and integrity of the confession.
Now, Chris Darden, I'm going to ask you to put your defense lawyer hat on. You've retired to Aruba. I don't know why you'd go there, but anyway. And Jorn Vandersloot comes and knocks on your door and says, please help me. How are you going to defend him in this?
Would I defend him in this?
No, how would you defend him in this?
Yeah, I think the first question is, would I?
Yeah, right.
Assuming that I would. I mean, I think you have to take the statement, which is not a confession, and I think you have to break it down. Now, the critical issue, if we're going to believe this so-called statement is true, is whether or not it is supported by what we know. Is it supported by the forensic evidence? Is it supported by other pieces of evidence? Now, for instance, he claimed in the statement that he telephoned a friend who came to the location, helped place the body into a boat and took the boat out to sea. Well, is there any evidence that such a phone call was ever placed from the location Vandersloot claimed? And the answer is no, apparently, according to a group of investigators. Second, well, what about this person who helped dispose of the body? Was he on Aruba that night? Was he there? Apparently, the answer is no. He was not there. Does he have a boat? No. Do you have a boat at that location? The location described by Vandersloot? No. Sure, it's a statement, an ill-advised statement made by the defendant on the one hand, but on the other hand, it is not a confession. It is not true, and it is not a statement that reasonable jurors can rely on.
Now, you've obviously, with the O.J. case, you tried a case that was heavy into the media. Now you, again, hypothetically, would defend a case that's heavy into the media. A lot of sympathy, including from this show host for the family, a lot of resentment towards the accused. Huge, big-time media coverage. Did O.J.'s trial start a lot of this? Yeah, probably. Did. How do you handle that? Is this better for the defense or is it better for the prosecution? Because you have somebody that is so hated and you really can't bring race into this. At least I don't think you can.
Well, you know, when I think of these three young men, I mean, let's assume that a trial would occur on Aruba. I mean, do we really know that jurors would be hostile to these three young men if they were defendants in this homicide? I'm not so sure that they necessarily would be. They are local boys. There is no body. There is a huge question as to how she died, if she died at all, and if she even died on the island or on that beach. Nobody really knows the circumstances, the real circumstances surrounding her disappearance, with the exception of the person or persons who are responsible for her disappearance. So I don't know that you won't find many, many jurors on the island who are sympathetic with these three boys and who believe that this is a media witch hunt, an American witch hunt, a prosecution compelled and directed by the United States government.
If you're just joining us, Chris Darden is here, and Deputy District Attorney Robin Sachs from L.A. County is here. And we're kind of dissecting the confession tape, if we can call it that, of Joran Vandersloot, given to investigative crime reporter Peter DeVries and his undercover operative. Robin Sachs, again, I let's go back to the roles here. You have to try this case, but you look at the investigation part of it, and it's just been bumbling and fumbling by the investigators, the detectives, and everyone else involved. And it took a crime reporter and an undercover operative whose reputation itself can be besmirched. How do you handle that? Because it's going to be easy for the defense attorney, Chris Darden, to come up on the stand, isn't it, to take some credibility away from the investigation?
I definitely think that there is a credibility issue in terms of how the investigation came to the point that we're at today. However, we're here, and we would have to deal with the fact that, you know, it did take Peter DeVries and his crew in order to elicit this type of admissions and or confessions, depending on how you look at it. But I think that the key is that there is no shortage of information that this tape and statements give. And what they do is it's a break in the case. It's not the end-all, mean-all. It's now a new opportunity to get a different look and different perspective at the case and reevaluate where we've looked and can we put together pieces that we had not been able to put together before. I don't think, you know, right now this new information isn't, you know, so far the courts in Aruba has not allowed and said that's not sufficient enough evidence to warrant extradition and putting Vandersloot back in custody. So even though that decision is being appealed by the prosecutor's office, it's certainly an opportunity to look for corroboration. And, you know, in my mind, and I'm sure in the minds of many that I see out on the blogs now, is that, you know, is dowry really daddy? Mm-hmm. And is this a time to take a look at daddy? And in terms of the, you know, the some of the issues that Chris brings up, I think it's accurate to say that there may not be much sympathy for an American girl and on what appears to be an American witch hunt. However, here you're dealing with much corruption and much payoff in government and judiciary and legislation. And, you know, perhaps this may be an opportunity for some of the other folks in Aruba to kind of expose the underculture of Aruban life.
Chris, several news reports today, believe it or not, on the blogs and across the internet from wire services have started to compare Joran Vandersloot to O.J. Simpson because of this, you know, the sociopathic type of personality, the almost bragging, if you will, accomplishment. O.J., if I did it, with his book, Vandersloot with his now famous TV confession, if that's it. I'm curious your take on that. Chris?
Did we lose him?
We might have. Robin, can I get your take?
I'm happy to answer that question. I can tell you what I think about that.
Absolutely.
You know, clearly, one of the greatest gifts we have in sociopaths who commit crimes is their complete narcissistic personality, in which they just can't handle not talking.
Yep.
And, you know, it's been predicted before. Larry Garrison has said it before, and he said it in his book with Dave Holloway,
yep.
You know, that it's only a matter of time till the truth will come out, and it has, and or at least portions of it. And I think that, you know, these types of people who are so sick, who can say that they can go to sleep at night after dumping a body, are the same people who can't shut their mouths about it later on.
And I think that's what brings so much credence to this undercover confession, is that he's been wanting to brag about this for a long time, and he got sucked in, for lack of a better term, and I think every word, except maybe some of the details, however you say that name, Jug Twitty and I are going to talk about that a little bit later tonight, about who we think that is, but there may be little bits and pieces of it, but it should be interesting to see just exactly where this goes. Are you still with us, Chris, or did we lose you?
Gone.
I think we lost him. Anyway, Robin Sachs, Deputy District Attorney from Los Angeles County, Chris Darden, thank you. If you could pass on my thanks to Chris, Robin, our time's just about up anyway. I appreciate that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care. Okay. Bye-bye. We're going to take a break, and we're going to continue analyzing this TV confession, if you want to call it that, from Mr. Vandersloot. And I'm going to go to one of the investigators, the private investigators that worked on this case, Art Wood. He's a former Secret Service agent, and I'm sure he has lots to say about the DeVries interview. We're going to take a break. This is Scared Monkeys Radio, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, we're back, and we're devoting the whole program tonight to the continuing saga of the disappearance of 18-year-old Natalie Holloway, and now this confession that crime reporter Peter DeVries and his undercover operative were able to get from Mr. Vandersloot. Now, Mr. Vandersloot, in his way of handling things, came forward and said, it's okay, he was just lying. His high-priced New York attorney came out and said, there's a problem with the translation. But when you read things something happened here, I was lucky, the ocean is huge, I'm blank if they find her, but the body is gone now, they'll never find her now. That sounds like a hell of a confession to me. I thought I'd bring on Art Wood. He's a former Secret Service agent, private investigator who's worked very closely with the family investigating the disappearance of Natalie. Hi, Art.
Hi, Dana.
Did you think that something like this, after I think you and I last talked about 2-3 weeks ago, that we would be talking today after this?
You know, I've always said that I think that this case can be solved, and it's going to take somebody talking. I'm just excited that it's, I'm surprised that the person talking is Joran. I thought it was going to be one of the other kids.
Yeah, I have
frankly
to agree
though,
with you.
I am not surprised that we're going to solve this case. And if you go back and listen to all the radio shows you've had that I've been on, he's saying it exactly the way I suspected that it happened.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. And one of the things that came up before we get down and dissect the confession itself, but one thing that you and I have talked about is the boat and somebody...
Well, folks, believe it or not, you know, if your listeners, and first of all, I want to wish you all a good evening, and I'm glad that Data's got me on the show tonight, but if you get the chance to rewatch that interview, that confession, and that's what it is,
yep.
You'll see that one of the things that he says... And I want to caution all the listeners to understand how criminals work and how confessions work. There's never, ever been a confession that told the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, people try, even when they're doing a confession, try to make themselves look good. First of all, he says, when he's talking to this Patrick guy, he says, I will take that name to the grave. Patrick pushes him, and he comes up with the name Dari, okay? I don't believe that Dari is the guy with the boat. Never, and I would caution your people, you know, all the listeners, to be very cautious about this Dari guy.
Right.
I still think that Cohen Gottenbosses is the acquaintance with the boat. As a matter of fact, Euron, in that confession, says it's a lifelong friend. And he, on a Dutch television, or on the Dutch version of the show, he apparently said that it was somebody he's known since he was 5 or 6 years old. Well, that's a perfect description of Cohen Gottenboss. So I believe that it is Cohen. It's his boat. We've now located the boat again, and we're passing that information along to the Reuben prosecutor. I just want everybody to know that that I've never given up, and Dave and Robin have never given up. This is a really, really tough time for Dave, Robin, and Beth, because, you know, they're finally learning the truth. Now they want to see somebody pay for it.
Right.
And that's what I'm hoping for. We all want to see Euron. What a creep, you know, what a creep. And obviously, there's more to this confession. There's always more to this story than these people, even in their confession. I mean, if it's the way he said it, there was no reason to get rid of this body, unless he was afraid that they were going to find out that he drugged the girl or raped her.
Absolutely, and again, I go back to what they say. If they find the body, you know, I'm effed, and that is so huge, and how true it is, Art, and you and I both know from our years of experience that, as you say, a confession isn't, yes, I did it, here is how I did it, and it's point by point by point. It is bits and pieces, and you don't necessarily have to come out and say the words, but the words that you say are so important.
Absolutely. It's a total picture. And obviously, if there was a law enforcement officer taking a confession, he has to pull it out of them, you know, one little bit at a time sometimes. Euron was on tape smoking marijuana, and he was freely discussing what he wanted that guy to hear, not the whole truth, you know?
Yeah.
He wanted him to know that they'll never find Natalie, that they took her to the sea, and that it's very interesting. He says that there's, Patrick prompts him by saying, is it a higher power that helped you through this? And he says, higher powers. He specifically says powers.
Yep.
And, you know, we all know that there are higher powers that have helped this kid, and we're not talking about the good Lord.
No.
So, and he knows it, too. And, you know, this whole thing could come down like a house of cards on some of these people that have helped him, including authorities. And I would love to see it. Still could happen.
Jug Twitty and I are going to talk in a little bit, Art, about the whole...
Jug Twitty, I said hello, and...
I will.
You know, I mean, he went through pure hell trying to help Beth through this endeavor, and, you know, I respect all of the time and effort and money he put into this, and, you know, he was somebody that tried very hard to solve this case also.
Jug and I are going to talk. I'm not going to. I actually recorded it a little earlier, Art, but Jug and I are going to talk about some things that I think will shock some listeners tonight. And you know, you and I will talk off air because you'll know exactly what we're talking about. But there's a bigger picture here besides this confession. You just mentioned it as far as authorities go. You know, is there corruption involved? Was this a cover up right from the start? There's all sorts of things. But what we're looking at now is we're looking to build a case. And I think a big part of that case was built. And if it hasn't been, then I don't know what will ever build it with this whole TV confession.
Absolutely. You know, one of the hardest things in the world for a parent is to not know what happened to your child, to deny them a proper funeral, to deny yourself a chance to grieve and to heal. And I want to see the truth come out so that this family can heal. Quite frankly, you know, Natalie is in a better place.
Yeah.
There's no question in my mind. And she has a message for everybody that she's okay now, you know. Now we got to take care of the creeps that did it to her. And that's what I'm out to do. I'm out to help any way I can. And as you know, I just got back from Aruba last week, Dana. I don't know if you know I was over there, but I was.
Right.
And I told the same story. I believe that we could solve this case. And I am not surprised that we're getting the truth now. I'm just surprised that it came out of Euron's mouth. Now, there's other people involved, and we're going to go after them. And the authorities are going to go after them. And hopefully the FBI will go after them. And the press will go after them. And I just want them to know we're coming for them. We're coming for you.
And I'll say one thing is that Natalie Holloway is in a better place now than Joran Vandersloot will ever be, ever.
Oh, there's no question about it. He is, you know, I don't even, I have to be careful what I say because we're on the air.
Right.
But he's a creep. That's the only way I can describe him. You know, his parents should be ashamed of themselves. This guy's a sociopath.
Yep.
And his mother said what a good boy he was. But, and let me tell you something. I want to make it perfectly clear that behind every sociopath, there's a mother that says what a good boy they were.
Yep.
That never made them pay for anything they did.
Chris Darden from the O.J. trial and I and were just discussing the comparisons between O.J. Simpson and Joran Vandersloot.
Oh, no, between O.J. And this guy.
Yep.
Well, you know, O.J.'s was clearly a murderer, and he did it in a rage. This is a different situation.
Yep.
This guy is more like Scott Peterson.
Exactly.
You know, he got rid of this girl because he is and didn't have one bit of conscience about it. If you watch that tape, he has no conscience. Sociopaths don't have a conscience. Behind every one of them is a mother that has babied them their whole life.
You know, let's talk a little bit about the media before I let you go, Art, and I thank you for coming on short notice. The media has done good. The media has really dropped the ball on this case. Peter DeVries, I can't say enough good about him.
It's great that nobody has let the case go. And you know what? The girl's mother and father have driven this case, though.
Right.
Natalie's parents have driven this case. They wouldn't let it die. They want to know what happened to their child. And there are people out there like Peter DeVries who wanted to get to the truth. He obviously has the kind of ego that just thrives on that. And God bless him for it, Dana.
Yeah.
Because we would have never... Somebody spent a lot of money to get the truth here.
Yep.
Peter DeVries is the one that did it. So, you know... I have nothing, I can't say anything negative about him whatsoever because, you know, this kid tells the story exactly the way that we have said it all along.
Absolutely. The days and weeks should be interesting. Artwood, thank you, and we'll be talking soon.
All right.
Thank you,
sir. Take care. And, you know, everybody could say a prayer for the Holloways and for Dave and Beth and Robin.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Take care, bud. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
That's Art Wood, and very emotional, and I think we all need to be and remember who the victim is here. I sat down with Jug Twitty, another person very closely involved, obviously, Natalie Holloway's stepdad, this afternoon, and here is what he had to say. Pay real close attention. Okay, we're back. This is the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. If you've seen any of the news reports here lately, I'm going to read from one here a little bit. It says, hidden camera footage broadcast on television in the Netherlands on Sunday showed Dutch student Joran Vandersloot saying he was with Natalie Holloway when she died on a beach in Aruba and that he asked a friend to dispose of her body at sea. She suddenly didn't do anything anymore, Vandersloot said of the 18-year-old Holloway in a conversation with a man he believed to be his friend. I thought what we do is, because there's been so much spin on this, of course, the lawyers, the high-priced mouthpieces, and Vandersloot himself were coming out saying, well, he didn't really mean it, he was lying. I thought we'd go to a family member here. Jug Twitty's with us. Hi, Jug.
Hi, Dana. How are you doing?
I'm good. You had a chance to catch the ABC episode of 2020 last night, did you not?
I did, yes.
You know, there's no easy way to ask these questions, but I might as well ask you your thoughts on what's been going on here lately.
Well, I mean, it's surprising that he would do this. Well, in a way it is, and in a way it's not. He's a sick individual, and I know... you know, in a way, it doesn't surprise me that he would come out and brag about it in just a matter of time. It's kind of what we've kind of hoped for a long time, that sooner or later somebody would say something, and it just happens to be him.
The crime reporter DeVries, who has been following this story, you know, for quite some time, went to a lot of effort to bring this out. Obviously, he's a TV guy, so he wants to make this part of his TV show and bring ratings about this. Have you or Beth heard anything officially as far as what's going to happen? Has this opened the case wide open now? Are they going to finally put this punk in jail where he belongs? What have you heard?
Well, Dan, they don't really, you know, like in the beginning, they still don't talk to the family as far as the prosecutor or anything. He probably discusses it with John Kelly, but as far as we know, or as I know, they haven't made any moves yet. I think they're still studying it. You know, my hope would be that now that it's kind of out in the open, that somebody else... hopefully like Deepak or Satish or somebody, since they're in the clear and he said they did nothing, I would hope they would come out and say something, you know, and maybe it'll flush some people out. That's what I'm hoping for.
It's easy for Vandersloot and his lawyer to come forward and say, well, he said it, but he didn't really mean it. How do you dispute videotape? But you know the investigation and the facts surrounding it as much as anyone. Some of the intricacies, some of the hidden facts that maybe some people didn't know. I'll just ask you flat out, is Joran telling the truth when he was caught on the sting operation?
Well, I definitely think he's telling the truth about that, you know, Natalie died while she was in his presence. But now, as far as taking her out in a boat, calling his friend, that part, I don't know for sure. I don't know if I can agree with that. I think he called his father. I still think Paulus is involved in it. And I think, you know, my take on it is that he probably... when he was at the Carlos and Charlie's and he asked her, you know, to do this 151 shot, which I read his report where he said in the beginning that he asked her to take the 151. She said, no, I can't take that. Can I just drink it in a couple of sips? He said, no, you got to take it in one shot. So I truly believe that that's when he put whatever drug he put in there, and then he took her to the beach, and then she, whatever happened to her there. I think that she was shaking or whatever, so I do believe he did it, and whether we win an accident or not, you know, why don't you just come forward and call 911 or, you know, whatever, and why would you even say that you'd take her out and just throw her off the boat not knowing whether she's really dead or not?
Well, yeah, that had to have been terribly difficult to see that punk, his smirk, his disgusting expression on a hidden camera regardless, but on nationwide television, basically talking about Natalie like she was a piece of garbage. Take her out, throw her out in the ocean, and hopefully nobody will find her. This is difficult, I know, but the family's reaction to seeing him on there like that. I know you said you're not surprised, but it had to have been heart-wrenching.
Oh, it is. I mean, you know, you see Beth on TV, and she's a very strong woman. You know, and throughout this whole deal, I think she's been encouragement to every woman out there that has a child that something like this might happen, that they would probably hope that they could be as strong as she is. But I assure you, you know, in her heart, she probably feels the same way everybody else does. You know, that she hates the guy, and, you know, would like to see him get what he deserves. And, you know, to sit there and just talk about your daughter like that, it hurts.
Oh, absolutely. You know, my audience is following this case, and 99.9% of us back you guys 1,000% and hope that you get the answers that you deserve. But an interesting question came up from many listeners, and I'm going to throw this out to you. It talked about Vandersloot, his confession, and I know some lawyers are saying it's not a confession, but damn it, I think he confessed about 10 times. But anyway, regardless, in talking about Natalie's having a seizure, the question here is, it says, one of the most important things to come out of last night, this was the ABC episode, was the fact that the police were asking Beth about seizures on the first night. And then all of a sudden now Vandersloot is talking about seizures. Is this something that, again, we've talked corruption in the past, that the police knew about all along?
Absolutely. Dana, the thing's been a cover-up from day one. They knew that Natalie was not alive the second day, I feel sure. And if you'll remember when I talked with you in December, I even brought that up about when they were questioning me about, they kept asking if she was epileptic, you know. And I was saying, why are you asking me those questions? I just don't understand. But now it all kind of comes together.
And that's got to be just absolutely so disgusting that this loser, Vandersloot, can talk about the seizures. You now know why the police asked you about the seizures. Will this real story ever come out? I'm going to ask you one more question, Jug, before I let you go, and I really appreciate you coming on and speaking to us today. And this question may be something that you don't want to respond to, but sadly, some in the media have decided to post some things actually about you and Natalie that were just totally not true. The speculation, the wild rumors, the garbage that comes out, and then to see it come up on a nationally recognized website must absolutely just be terrible. Why is this happening? Do you just ignore it, or, you know, you're human, it must bother you?
You know, actually, it doesn't bother me because it's so far from me. I mean, there's a lot of other things that bother me, but they ask me those questions. I mean, the police officers ask me those questions down there.
God.
And I'm just like, this is the craziest thing I've ever heard of in my life. And I actually got up and walked out of when they were trying to take my deposition or whatever, because they were asking me. I said, you guys are, you need about to be looking for Dan, like, not asking me these stupid-ass questions.
And yep.
I blew up, and they got all mad because I walked out and wouldn't sit there and answer their questions, but that doesn't hurt me at all. I mean, my friends know, you know, how I love Natalie to death, and that's just so far from being true. It's just smoke screens they're trying to throw up there. So,
well, it's called damage control, and you know, you or I, funny you never got up and decked somebody. I think I might have, but regardless, the goal was to find Natalie. Jug, again, thank you for coming on. You've seen the 2020 episode. There's breaking news on this every day. I'm going to be interviewing Jossie Manser here in a few minutes to see what he has to say, but I guess I said one last question, but I'm going to stick in one more. This name, Drury, or whatever Vandersloot said of the person that came and helped him dispose of Natalie, is that a name that is recognizable to you at all, or do you think he's fudging that part of it?
No, I've never heard that name before. There was some mention to somebody that maybe the restaurant people saw somebody else out there, but I'd be willing to put my money on Paulus.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. Anything else, Jug, before I let you go? We're all sitting back again.
Yeah, I appreciate, you know, as I say, I follow Scared Monkeys quite a bit. That's where I get a lot of my information. I know there are a lot of people in there that have helped, and I really do appreciate Peter DeBries and Patrick doing this thing. So it's really helped about that a lot.
Absolutely, and we can't thank them enough, and I can't thank you enough, and tell you, Beth, and all your family that we're behind you 100%, and hopefully we'll get some answers here soon. Thanks, Jug.
Hey, Dan. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. That's Jug Twitty, and we'll be right back in a moment here with the managing editor of Diario, Jossie Manser.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
All right, we're back in the continuing investigation into the disappearance of Natalie Holloway, and most importantly, the Peter DeVries undercover sting operation, where we have seen a confession. Actually, I consider it to be several confessions of Joran van der Sloot. I thought I'd bring on the managing editor of Diario, Jossie Manser, to give us an update as far as what's going on today. Hi, Jossie.
Hi.
Now, hey. You've had a chance to see the video, have you?
Yeah, I saw it completely, sure.
Okay, your thoughts, and then I have a few questions for you.
Well, my thought says that this is a very damning piece of proof, evidence against Joran. I don't see how he's going to wriggle himself out of this predicament that he put himself in. He can't come out and just say, I was lying. No, nobody's going to buy that anymore. He was not lying. We saw his expressions, and we saw the sincerity with which he answered all the questions of this man that was with him, Van Ames.
Now, we've heard, Jossie, that the prosecution asked that Joran be arrested. That was turned down, and that there's an appeal process. Can you update us on that?
Yes, he was turned down, and he was very disappointed in that because he considers the evidence on the tape sufficiently strong to warrant his arrest and bringing him back to Aruba. Now, the prosecution was not satisfied with this decision, so they appealed the case today. Now, the decision of a higher court, the panel of three judges, may come in within hours or tomorrow or the day after.
Okay, so we're not sure. Have we heard anything from Paulus or Anita, or have they been keeping quiet?
But they've been keeping quiet, except for I have been informed for one telegram that he sent to DeVries, denying that he ever took a phone to Joran when he was in prison, because Joran said that in the recorded conversations that he had with Van Ames. He said that his father took a phone for him. He just wanted to show how easy it was for him to get whatever he wanted, even in prison.
Exactly. This name, Drury or whoever that has come up that we've talked about, I know there have been press reports where you've reported that there are actually two people with that name in Aruba. I've also seen a report that who he might be talking about is Lorenzo R., his half-brother. What can you tell us about that?
That may very well be that it is Van Renzi was referring to, or some other friend, or some other friends. But the dowry that he mentioned by name, he's in Aruba. He held a press conference. He denied everything. He denied having been with Joran on the beach that night or going out with a boat. He was in Holland then. He was studying in Holland, and he has the alibi to prove it.
Now, the Aruban people have seen this story now for well over 2.5 years. It's come full bore now. It's a big issue. What are the Aruban people thinking of Joran van der Sloot today?
Very badly. I mean, the impression that they have here in Aruba, generally, and the whole population is that this guy must be sick. I mean, there must be something wrong with him. I mean, a man cannot pretend to be lying all the time to get out of problems the way he does. And they are glad it's coming to the fore now. They think that the solution might be visible within the very near future. So they're very upbeat that this case will be properly closed this time.
Has there been any reports, Jossie, of any additional searches of the van der Sloot property, either in Aruba or where he was staying in Holland?
Yes, there are reports that the police in Holland went, searched his apartment. They went to his grandmother's apartment. They searched in there. What they took with them from those searches, we don't know, and what the result is of the investigation, we don't know either, because everything is happening in Holland now.
Exactly. And Joran van der Sloot, reports are coming out today, is in hiding. Have you heard that?
Yes, I've heard that he is in hiding. And in the place that people thought that he was hiding, you had an agglomeration of many people in front of them, very angry, shouting many things against him, even threats.
Well, I think threats will get no one anywhere. However, Mr. Vandersloot would be wise to come out and finally tell the truth. Just one question before we let you go, and I believe he did tell the truth on that video. We've seen Joe Tacopina, Joran's, he keeps calling himself Joran's lawyer. I'm not sure if he's his media lawyer. He certainly isn't a lawyer that can practice in Aruba, unless I'm wrong, coming out and saying that this is nothing, it's there's no evidence, and nothing more can be done. Has Joran's Aruban lawyer actually made a statement on this yet?
No, they haven't. They've been very quiet. And the image that Tacopina was building was basically building of Joran of being an angel, a well-behaved young man. I think that came tumbling down with the wine-throwing incident, with this marijuana smoking in the car, and this violent aspect of his character. I mean, if this doesn't convince Tacopina who his client really is, I don't know what will convince him.
Absolutely. Jossie, thank you, sir.
You're quite welcome.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Jossie Mansour, managing editor of Diario. Will the truth finally be told? I think it's been told. There may be a few little I's to dot and T's to cross and figure out who this Drury is or who he was talking about helped him dispose of Natalie. The truth will come out eventually, I hope. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. We'll be right back.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
Okay, I thought I'd finish up tonight with the author of the book Into the Deep, The Hidden Confession of Natalie's Killer. Of course, that's Dr. Andrew Hodges. You'll see a link on our webpage to learn more about forensic thought prints and, of course, to purchase the book or learn more about the book. And Dr. Hodges, of course, has been following this case and involved in this case for some time. And most recently, our last interview had been in Aruba helping with the deep water search for Natalie. Dr. Hodges, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Dan. It's good to be with you again.
Now, I never thought when you and I talked last that I would have you on tonight to talk about a confession. In fact, the confession that you and I talked about all the time was what you had analyzed. First of all, your thoughts on the DeVries undercover sting operation.
Well, I thought it was very valuable. I really do. I think, you know, Joran was very ready to confess, particularly after getting off, and I thought he did a great service. I think he's going to make a terrible mistake. I think he's making, at the same time, a very bad mistake in thinking he's got the whole truth. Everybody likes to solve the case, but, you know, and I'm concerned about Beth's support for his story. Criminals, as you know, give up their story bit by bit, so
right.
I'm concerned that he shifted the case back to where Joran really wants it to be, which is a one-on-one story. So I have concerns. I'm very grateful for what he did at the same time.
Well, you know, I just had Art Wood on a few minutes ago, one of the investigators, the private investigators, and Art and I were talking about how this now needs to branch off into several different directions, not only with the evidence, the statement, other people who may be complicit. Hell, we can go right down to the corruption as far as the Aruban law enforcement. But I wanted to bring you on to talk about some of the words that Mr. Vandersloot used in this tape. In fact, I'm going to read a couple of them to you here. And I know you've seen the tape too, but
right.
I think it's so telling. In fact, I counted at least 8 to 10 times where, in my opinion, he's confessed to a crime. The undercover operative asks him, what happened to her? Vandersloot says, something happened here. I was lucky. The ocean is huge. I'm blank if they find her. But the body is gone now. They'll never find her now. And it just goes on and on. For you, his words must have been fascinating.
Well, you know, Dana, if you've got to think outside the box and read between the lines. The unconscious mind, the deeper intelligence, cannot lie. And if you follow the thought prints, the same idea repeated 10 different ways, what you find in Joran is another confession that matches his previous confession, that matches Deepak's. And, you know, it's very interesting how this matches just what you said. He said it's a big ocean. Same words that Deepak used in his situation.
Right.
But if you just go through it, he's told you that she's dead. He's told you that they took her out to the ocean. He made reference. He hinted at a cage, and we could come back to that. He has implied she's discoverable in that I don't think she can be found. He's given us distance. He specifically mentioned CPR, which was in my profile, you know, from Deepak. He specifically mentioned, if you follow the time of death, he identified it 2 o'clock, which I said was the precise time of death. He said 12, no 2, no 3, no end zone 2. On no 2, he predicted that. He used a reference for vomiting, which was, you've got to look at it, again, read the same idea, foaming at the mouth, and then she went into convulsions, and then she expired. That is very compatible with the foaming at the mouth and vomiting and aspirating. So he had sex, a sudden death, tried to resuscitate her, made a phone call right afterwards, which was part of the profile. I don't think he called not only his father, but the boat driver. And then he referenced the boat. Notice what he did. He said, he gave you 2 clues. He said, it's a very good friend, one of his inner circle. He said, he had a boat nearby. I'll never name his name. And then he says Dowry or whatever.
Right.
It wasn't Dowry, but you got to look at his clues. It was a very good friend. It was somebody with a boat nearby in the marina. That's in my book. You know, I think who he points to. And then the phone calls to his father, and then the fact that it's in the ocean and a boat trip. And, you know, so it matches the same idea that we've seen all along. And he's just giving us more clues and confirming the same identical profile that Deepak did. What you have to do is read through his denial, which is Deepak and Satish were not involved. The last thing is what he's trying to do, which they've tried to do all along, which is shift the case to the only plausible way out for him, which is a one-on-one, voluntary sex beach story. That never happened. This was an involuntary assault, a group rape. And so that's, you know, he's trying to shift it away from the three-on-one that nobody will ever let him off with. But if he goes to the one-on-one beach story, then he's got an out. You know, and it was a very favorable interview in a way, trying to make himself look innocent in that way, even though it was a confession. So you have to read between the lines to get to the real story.
But does the common sociopath, narcissistic personality like to brag and take the blame themselves, be the one, the only one, and not involve anyone else? Is that part of this?
You know, it's a funny thing. Yeah, he's got the narcissism for sure. You know, when did he confess? It was at the moment he was set free. And he gets in the car and says, they had nothing on me. I laughed at him. I didn't say a word. It didn't bother me. And what we see at the same time is he's very guilt-ridden, and that's when he starts telling the story. So what people, I hope people don't miss, is what you know as law enforcement person, the prison of the mind. This was a prison break. He couldn't take the guilt anymore, so he starts giving out part of the story. And though he's narcissistic, yes, but he is, you know, and he likes the attention, he's punishing himself over it. So it's not just narcissism. It is also the hidden, you know, confession. And narcissists, by the way, also can be very guilt-ridden, you know, over their narcissism, so over their self-centeredness. So it's got both, and I hope we don't miss the guilt and the confession.
A huge part of this now, or hopefully not only for the evidentiary aspect of it and to corroborate some of what he said, and of course for peace for the family, would be to find Natalie. And you and I have talked about this before on other shows. What sort of information did Vandersloot give that will help find the body?
You know, it's interesting. What he's confirmed that she's in the ocean. He's confirmed that it was a boat drop. He's confirmed, even though he said it was towards the Marriott, you know, the boat was at the Marriott Marina, which we've always thought. He said, well, you know, it was on the beach near the Holiday Inn. That's the only misleading thing. Previously, he had clearly identified Fisherman's Huts as the place he's on the beach. So he's trying to mislead you a little bit, but he's given you the takeoff point. He's given you the boat. He's given you at a certain distance. And I know what he did. Notice what he did, Dana. I think the profile shows he's deep, the body's deep, and that they took her deep. So he says, oh, he didn't take her out far. I really don't know where they took her, but he's giving you distance as a clue. Don't just look shallow, look deeper. And then he gave you a cage reference. I'll have to think about that in a second. It'll come back to me. But he alluded, oh, I know what it was. You know, he said, maybe I don't think they can find her.
Yeah.
That means that she's in something that is potentially discoverable, see. He's not sure. And so all of this fits, and it's just the same message that he's thinking distance. So I would read it. He said he didn't take her out further than 2 kilometers, or he took her out 2 kilometers. I think you read, look deeper. You know, he's giving you a clue. Don't buy his lies. He's not telling you, he's not going to give everything away. And so I think the profile of his thoughts, if you look at them, fit perfectly with the same previous profile he's given, that Deepak's given, and he's given us more detail. He's mentioned a boat. He's mentioned, alluding to a container. He's alluding to distance. He's given you direction. So I think it's a very valuable confirming comment. And if I was on the boat, which I've, have contact with them in different ways, I told them to take it as an encouragement. They're on the right path. They're going to come all across her body. I just hope they find it with a sonar.
Absolutely. Just one more question before I let you go, Dr. Hodges. Our time is limited this evening. But you and I both know you've been to Aruba. I've covered this story now for, since day one. We can talk about corruption. Yeah, we can talk about how the case was not investigated right. But there are good people on Aruba. There's going to be a lot of damage control, a lot of spin now. Jeroen van der Sloot is going to eventually come forward and speak to someone. He has no choice now. What do you think that's going to be if you were to look at his, at his mind, the forensic thought print in advance? I guess it's a little unfair question for you, but he's going to say something.
Your guess is as good as mine. But people resort to their familiar calling card. They use their same familiar techniques. He's already called into Dutch TV and denied this. I think liars continue to lie. And I think he's going to continue to stick with his lie. I think his father's going to say, apologize and all that, to say you were sucked in by your own given marijuana and so forth. So I think that until they have a body, and if they leave this in his court and ignore Deepak and Satish, I think that they're going to make a mistake. The pressure needs to come, and Dave Holloway and others who know this, needs to come on, finding that boat driver. And I think you found the boat driver, then you put some pressure on him, and then you kind of break the thing. But Jeroen, he's going to continue to lie, would be my guess. I know you've got experience with this, and you would have similar thoughts, but that's my initial take.
I agree completely. Dr. Andrew Hodges, the book is Into the Deep, and you'll find a link to Dr. Hodges' website on ours. Thank you, sir.
Dana, thank you so much.
Take care. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. All right, we're going to finish up here in just a minute. We've actually gone over time, but I think it's important that we continue on with our coverage on the disappearance of Natalie Holloway. So I will open up the phone line for a few minutes here. 1-306-842-7884. 1-306-842-7884. What are your comments? I purposely waited to do the show tonight because I wanted everyone to have seen the 2020 episode and other coverage and have it sink in a little bit and see what you have to think. Come to your own conclusion, so to speak, as far as what you think happened or what you think the admissibility of this this confession will be. Did Jeroen confess? In my opinion, absolutely. He's confessed several times. Will this lead to more? I certainly hope so, because it's about time. Hi, you're on the air.
Dana, how are you this evening? It is Red.
Hi, Red. How are you doing?
I don't know. I think with my my cold and flu, I've got a nice low voice that I can rival yours now.
Yeah, you've had quite the time with the flus and the colds and stuff, buddy. You and I need to go to Club Med for a couple of weeks.
Wouldn't that be something? Although maybe we can go down to Aruba.
I don't think we're welcome there.
No, I think my passport's been banned.
All right. Well, I'm glad to have you. Obviously, you've seen and read and heard and listened to the show tonight and all the other coverage. Your thoughts on the confession?
I would almost say who would have thought, but by the same token, hasn't it been the MO of Jeroen van der Sloot all along?
Yep.
Every time this case, kind of took a back seat, seemed like the media wasn't paying attention anymore, seemed like the family maybe wasn't getting answers, all of a sudden to the rescue came Ron Vandersloot doing an interview with ABC, doing an interview over in Holland, doing interviews with Nova, writing a book. Now this stunt. I mean, you know, Webster is going to have to put in his dictionary a picture of Joran Vandersloot under narcissist.
Yeah.
It is just absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah.
And it's not even that he's that stupid, it's he's that sick.
Yep.
I mean, the closest thing, Dean, I mean, we've covered so many crime stories and we follow so much of these things on the news. You do it in real life. And it's, tell me that Joran Vandersloot is not BTK.
Right.
Just when he knows he's gotten away with it, people have covered up the crime. People have gone out of their way. They've cashed in every bit of their reputation that they possibly could. This kid goes and starts talking away, not because he wants to, but because he has to.
Yep.
This thing, what he did to Natalie Holloway, in this kid's mind, is a badge of honor. He acts like a punk. He
yep.
acts like a gangster wannabe,
yep.
and it is just absolutely pathetic.
Yep.
But what I find so amazing, Dana, about this, in first, you know, watching the Peter DeVries story when it showed live and everybody trying to translate and get information, and then with ABC doing it last night, is that so much of this is exactly what everybody has been writing about
yep.
on Scared Monkeys for 2.5+ years.
Yep.
I mean, people have nailed what this kid did. He ever came out and confessed to it.
Yep.
And it's vindication to, you know, I talked to Jug briefly this afternoon. You know, for a man who had his name, you know, just smeared through the mud
yep.
by a bunch of rotten individuals, you know, Heron Man is vindicated. Beth, the same thing. All this woman wanted to do was find her daughter, find answers, get some type of an answer. And her doors were closed to her every inch of the way, and now we're seeing, obviously they were closed from day one,
yep.
but we all knew this. But it took Joran Vandersloot to confirm what we've all known since day one, that he's a lowlife, that he's a liar, and like Beth said, he's a rotten, punk, nasty. He is everything that Beth Holloway said that he was in the beginning, and he verified it for the world to see.
Absolutely, and if anything, we should thank him for solving his own case. And I'm not trying to be a smartass by saying that. Obviously, Aruban law enforcement are walking around still with their heads up their asses. But Joran Vandersloot just couldn't help but confess he had to. And I think we're going to hear more in the days and weeks to come. What do you think?
Oh, I think that honestly, I think part of this is the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
I don't ever think that we've seen everything. I've come to know in this story along the way. We keep quiet on so much stuff out of respect for the family.
Right.
There will be more. You don't, even with Peter DeVries, he's not a stupid man. Yeah, he wanted to solve a crime, but he's also a businessman.
Yep.
I don't think that he doesn't have more.
He's not done yet. No.
You know, I mean, there's going to be Peter DeVries part two, part three, you name it.
Yeah.
And obviously, we've learned from watching the videos of Joran, he doesn't. He likes to talk, and obviously, he just rambled on and on, and your last guest, you know, Mr. Hodges said, you know, you have to read between the lines, which you do.
Yep.
I mean, you know, your friend and mine, Joe Tacopino, would like everyone to believe that, you know, because he lied about one thing, that means he's lying about everything. Not the case. Not with a sociopath. They tell their story in a manner which is very cryptic, and they tell a story that is partially true, but they also try to pump themselves up to say, look at me, look at me. There's so much stuff in what he said that you really had to just... I was a little stunned when I started hearing some of the stuff that he was saying. When you talk about you'll go to your grave and you'll never mention the name, well, I don't know about you, Dana, but there are very few people that fall into that category, and generally those people are family.
Yeah.
When you, from out of the clear blue, say that my parents weren't involved in the disposal of Natalie's body, well, no one asked him the question. I mean, he just uttered it.
Yep.
I mean, Dana, that's like you going to a doctor and telling the doctor, well, you know, this isn't really my illness, it's my friend's illness. I mean, it is absolutely amazing that this, and you can't even call him an idiot, because this just shows how sick of a human being he was, and it really, really starts to show such an incredible pattern of what he did when he threw the wine at Peter DeVries, and what he did when he thought nobody was looking. But then when, you know, he goes on Greta, oh, he acts like he's some choir boy. And, you know, today Greta's eating a lot of crow.
She is, yep.
She has to come out and admit that she was not only duped, but she was fed a line from Joe Tacopino, and she believed that nonsense hook, line, and sinker.
Yep.
And there's a lot of people out there right now that have been following this case, and you know, whether they be on hate sites or whether they didn't believe Beth or whether they just had a little bit of an anti-American bias, they right now, and some of them may never admit it, know damn well the guy is guilty.
Absolutely.
And it is truly vindication for a family who, you know, I've talked to Beth so many times, I can't even begin to count the amount of hours that we've talked. That, you know, these conversations never go beyond the telephone. They don't show up on the pages of Scared Monkeys. They
right.
don't show up in, you know, I'm not selling my story to the TV tabloids. I mean, these people are genuine salt of the earth. They deserve the answers, and hopefully they will get them now. And as Beth said the other night at the end of the Peter DeVries show, you know, she is finally getting the answers. And, you know, we don't know what the Aruban courts are going to do, because they're so corrupt in their own right. But the world now knows the truth.
Yep.
And there's nowhere that this kid can go that people aren't just going to look at him with disdain for leaving. Even if his story is true, it's how he portrays it. He left a person who was in need of medical help to die.
Yep.
And then disposes of a body not knowing whether she was even dead.
Yep.
I mean, how many people, you're a police officer,
yep.
Dana. How many times have you seen people who were drug overdosed who were in comas?
Yeah.
The natural tendency is your heart beats really slow when that happens.
Yep.
I mean, yeah. Who, you know, Jorn Vandersloot is a doctor who determined that somebody was dead, so he decided to get rid of a body like it was a bag of garbage.
Yeah.
I mean, the world now knows
yep.
what kind of a just human being he is.
Yep.
And imagine what it's like when the camera isn't on Jorn. What this kid is truly capable of.
Absolutely. Well said, my friend, and I'm going to let you go. Go save your voice, take some vitamin C, and we'll talk to you soon.
Dana, tremendous show tonight. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And I'll end up saying this, that Natalie Holloway is in a better place than you and I. And Jorn Vandersloot has a certain place that he will end up being. I don't want to be there. That's the show for tonight. Remember, our webpage is scaredmonkeysradio.com. The show will be available for podcast a little bit later on. We'll see you real soon. Thank you to all my guests. Good night.
been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.